A day after Walmart reported strong holiday quarter earnings, Britain's competition watchdog throws doubt on the retailer's UK grocery merger. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig, filling in for Anu Anand. Good morning. The Competition Markets Authority said today a tie-up between UK grocery store chain Sainsbury's and Walmart-owned Asda could lead to higher prices and less choice for consumers here. Adding insult to injury for the nearly $20 billion merger, the CMA says it'll be difficult for the two chains to address those concerns. Sainsbury's boss this morning called the assertion fundamentally flawed and outrageous. So where does Walmart go from here? Thomas Barrington is retail analyst at Global Data.
I think it's important to say that this isn't the definitive end of the story. Sainsbury's and Asda have both released a joint statement saying that they will be fighting this and they will be pursuing the merger still. It's quite an unusual move from the CMA because they really have hit them hard and said it's not just the supermarkets, it's the fuel and online as well. It really is a blow to Sainsbury's and Asda. From Walmart's perspective, it's an annoyance really more than like a threatening situation because Asda represents quite a small amount of Walmart's business.
So the merger was meant to be a way for Walmart to retreat from the British retail market where it struggled to compete with other grocery giants. If this deal does fail, what does it mean for the company and what could a plan B for Walmart look like?
It's actually very difficult to see a very clear plan B for Walmart because if this is something, a business that they still want to get rid of, which it seems like it would be, there aren't really any retailers that would be willing to take on a business as a whole of that size. I mean, Sainsbury's was one of the few that could, but any other grocer couldn't because they'd be blocked by the CMA likely as much as Sainsbury's would be. And there aren't any other businesses that could pay that much and be willing to take on that much space. Having said that, Asda has actually been performing quite well against other UK grocery giants recently. It's just not been performing as well as the rest of Walmart's operations.
And we've seen Walmart ramp up its focus in the US amid its growing competition with Amazon and entry into high growth markets like India. At least until the most recent quarter in the US, it's been struggling on both those fronts. Does it need to shift strategy again, or does it just need to give these efforts more time?
There's been a lot said about how Amazon have become the king of retail, and that was through early investment in online and only online, which they now dominate. But Walmart have done very well. They did shift strategy 18 months ago or so to focus on its home US market. That is starting to pay off. That was seen in the last quarter. Sales were good in the US, but it means that it can't really fight the battle on two fronts and has to sacrifice some of its international arm and expenditure there or loss there to support that development in its own country.
Thomas Barrington there. Let's do the numbers. Sainsbury's shares dropped more than 15% at the open in London after the CMA, that's the regulator here, released those preliminary findings. Meanwhile, European stocks are following Asia markets higher amid continued optimism on a deal between the U.S. and China on its trade spat. Mining giant Glencore announced today it'll cap global coal production going forward, the BBC's Su Ping Chan reports.
Glencore's move to cap coal production is the clearest sign yet that the natural resources industry is yielding to investor pressure on climate change. In a surprise announcement, the commodities giant largely ruled out any further expansion, saying it would cap production at current levels. Glencore is the world's top coal exporter and one of the biggest producers outside of China. However, pressure from climate action groups, including the powerful Church of England, has played an influential role in taking the Paris Climate Change Agreement to limit global warming to below 2 degrees directly to Glencore. The company stopped short of pulling out of coal operations altogether. The division remains lucrative, contributing to close to a third of its underlying earnings in the past year. In London, I'm the BBC's Su Ping Chan for Marketplace.
Britain's Prime Minister heads to Brussels again today to try and seek concessions on her Brexit deal in order to get it through Parliament. While there are many sticking points, the future of UK fishing has been at the heart of the debate. The BBC's Sean Farrington has more from Britain's biggest fishing port.
It's a busy morning because there's been 4,000 boxes of white fish, of squid and roe. A lot of people want to fish from UK seas, and that's the big controversy around our relationship with the European Union and how it plays out after Brexit, because the common fisheries policy is a way of divvying up who can fish in those seas and who gets to sell that fish onwards later. I'm joined with a couple of people, Bryce and Elaine. Bryce, you're from the University of York. When you look at what's going on in Peterhead and the issues with the Brexit at the minute, how do these two things tally?
There's a lot of fish here, and there's a huge diversity as well. But actually, most of this is going overseas, and most of what the British public eat is actually imported from other countries outside Europe. And as a result, those trading relationships are so important. And that's what we're trying to balance up. Through Brexit, the industry wants you know, more control, more quotas for catching fish, but they also want to continue to trade freely. And that's a difficult balancing act to achieve.
And Elaine White, you're from Clyde's Fishing Association. That issue, you've still got to get the fish selling around Europe. How does that tally with the argument of we want a bigger quota?
Of course, we would like to see some more stocks coming back in for an uplift in quota so that the men can fish more seasonally and fish different stocks as well. But it's a difficult one.
And when you see a morning like this morning, Bryce, it's busy. But lots of people might say fishing is a part of the whole UK economy. It's a tiny, tiny proportion. Why should we be worrying so much about its future?
It is small in terms of GDP, but I think it has a bigger value than that. You know, Britain is an island nation. It has a long history of fishing, and it's particularly important in some of the more remote parts of the coast. Fishing is one of the few opportunities for jobs.
Bryce and Elaine, thank you very much to you both. The noise continues at Peterhead Fish Market as the last of the fish gets auctioned away. This will still be here come April, May, June, but what rules they'll all be trading under, we still don't quite know.
Sean Farrington reporting there. Finally, can't get enough emojis? Next month in Australia, $350 lets you add one to your license plate. Hard eyes, anyone? In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.